KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Norma Wong has a message for anyone struggling to cope with the current tumultuous times. Stop worrying about it. Wong is both a political strategist and a Zen master. She is also Native Hawaiian and draws on indigenous knowledge to help out on major projects like the Navy's cleanup of munitions to ways for candidates to better connect with Native constituents. Norma Wong is our Native in the Spotlight right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill to create an alert system for missing indigenous people in New Mexico has passed the state legislature and heads to the governor's desk. Jeanette Didios has more.
The Turquoise Alert System will allow law enforcement to quickly share information about missing indigenous people through news media, social networks, and digital highway signs without having to wait the standard 48 hours. According to the New Mexico Department of Justice, there are about 200 missing indigenous people in the state. Bill sponsor, Democratic Senator Angel Charlie, who's Laguna and Diné, shared the news on Instagram and said the system is not a tribal mandate, but will instead go through the Department of Public Safety.
It's not going to fix our jurisdictional complexity issues, but it is going to ensure that when a Native person goes missing, that there's immediate rapid response.
The alert system will coordinate with state law enforcement agencies, tribal communities, and state resources when a missing indigenous person goes missing. The governor has 20 days after the session ends to sign this bill into law and would take effect July 1st. For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
The number of Alaska Native language speakers has been declining over the years, including speakers of Aleutic. But a new language class that's live streamed from Port Lyons aims to combat that trend locally. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
Jamai Kuiana Teluji, hello and welcome. Thank you all for coming to another episode of King's Corner.
Every Thursday, students from the school in the Native village of Port Lyons discuss Aleutic culture and language. That's in preparation for class lessons and conversations in Aleutic that are live streamed online twice a month. It's the Port Lyons students' first time speaking their native language within school through the Aleutic Culture class. That includes practicing everything from weather reports to animals and place names in Aleutic. Jess Egemeyer II, who works for the Native Village of Port Lyons, teaches the class.
I really saw a need for content that was focused on the local community and that would include current events happening in the village and at the school, a local safety bulletin, you know, the weather forecast as you've seen.
Egemeyer says the live stream, which is called King's Corner after the school's mascot, is a product of elders in the previous generation laying the groundwork for language revitalization in Port Lyons and around Kodiak Island. That multi-year-long effort by multiple organizations and individuals has led to Aleutic textbooks, digital audio recordings of Native speakers, and language courses for college students or even adults.
If we don't teach our children now, this is how languages die, and it's unfortunately not uncommon.
Alaska Native languages in general are at risk of being lost or going extinct, as elders who speak the language are passing on. For Koniag or Kodiak Aleutic, which is the dialect mainly spoken in the Kodiak archipelago, less than 20 fluent first language speakers are still alive today. Egemeyer says the class will go through the rest of this semester, and he hopes to continue it this summer and next school year, too.
We say in Aleutic, Tunk Chukumgin Chali, I will see you again.
Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
The U.S. Postal Service is hosting a first day of issue ceremony for its Forever Stamps, celebrating powwows. Four stamps showcase paintings of Native dancers by Cochiti Pueblo artist Mateo Romero, featuring women's traditional dance, crow hop dance, men's hoop dance, and women's fancy shawl dance. The ceremony will be held at the Gathering of Nations powwow in April in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. As a political consultant, Norma Wong knows what elected leaders need to do to connect with constituents. As a Zen master, Wong has insights into mindfulness and her own connection to spirituality. In her new book, Wong offers a guide for navigating tumultuous change while incorporating indigenous knowledge and Zen practices. Her book is titled, When No Thing Works. She is also a former Hawaiian state legislator and continues to work on important political issues affecting Native Hawaiians and others. Norma Wong joins us today as this month's Native in the Spotlight. We'll talk about her life, her work, and her spirituality. You can join us with comments and questions at 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE, and you can also post comments or questions on our website and our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Joining us now from Oahu, Hawaii, is Norma Kaveloku Wong. She is the author of When No Things Work. She is Native Hawaiian and Hakka. Norma, good morning. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Aloha. Aloha kakou.
Aloha to you as well, Norma. We have so much to talk about, and I want to begin with just your expertise in both political and spiritual contexts, and you're a very trusted voice for people who are interested in approaching difficult issues with hope. And my first question is, with the current era of divisive political discourse that we're living in, where do you find that hope?
I find the hope in our capacity to meet humans as humans. And if we lose that, then we lose everything.
So I'm sitting here right now, I'm thinking of people all over the U.S. who listen to our show every day. We've got about 90 stations, and they're confused, they're discouraged, they're feeling stress. Where do we begin? What's the first step towards getting to that point of hope?
Well, I believe that first thing in the step to get hope is actually to meet the day properly. And I'm really serious about this, which is to say that when we have rested through the night, that is nature's way of giving us a fresh start. And so we need to take advantage of that fresh start, that first part of the morning, to greet the day in the ways that our ancestors used to greet them, and to make sure that we are grounded in who it is that we are, not at who it is that we have an expectation that other people want us to be. So it's only in that strong certainty of our beingness that we will be able to take on the really, really precipitous land that is ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. I know it's just after 7 a.m. where you are in Oahu. Norma, how did you greet your day this morning?
Well, you know, I greeted my day in you know, rather plain ways, which is to say that the first beings awake in this household are not humans. And so, you know, therefore the cats will make themselves known and they will want to be fed. They don't worry about much about anything else, right, except being fed. And so there's that tending to some other being that actually helps my day. The morning here is getting warmer, much too early in the year than it should. And so, you know, understanding that that part is changing and that I may need to actually wake up much earlier if I am to be in that part of the morning in which the night is giving way to the day. I think all of us need to do that, right? So the global climate change is telling us to change our human behavior and in that way to be more in rhythm with whatever may be needed.
Norma, let's go to your book. The title again, When No Thing Works. Why that title? And what does that mean, when no thing works? Because to me, it sounds a little bit discouraging, but yet this is a book about hope.
It is about hope. So it's about the realization that when things are in actual collapse, that is the moment in which we can summon the courage and also summon deep wisdom to do what might be generationally necessary. And that in other times, when things are going somewhat well and somewhat badly, we may be willing to just go along with the status quo because that's an easier course. So yes, this is about the hope offered by that one threshold that crisis gives us, right? That threshold in which big transformational change may be possible.
Mm-hmm. You write about what you call the time place of collapse. And can you expand on what you mean by time place and also collapse? Are we there yet? Are we in a period of significant collapse, or are we heading there? Because I worry about this all the time myself.
Okay. You know, I don't know if we are at the bottom of the trough yet, but we have definitely entered it. I don't think we should worry too much about that. You know, it's like, so you used to live in New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so I have been there a couple of times, and I remember that at certain times of the year, you have like that sudden storm that comes upon you.
Yeah, and, the monsoon yeah. season in the late summer, monsoon season.
The late summer, the monsoons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And so what is that first sign of the monsoon?
What's funny is it'll usually be like a pretty day, and then around like dusk, usually like late afternoon, kind of it just hits out of nowhere. But you can tell, you can kind of feel it in the air, and the sky will change. Yeah.
Okay. So if you can feel it in the air and the sky will change, there's no use worrying about whether the monsoon will come or not.
Mm.
Right. So we are in it. And, you know, when I refer to time place, I mean, it's like it's both the moment that we're in, but it's also the conditions that we're in, the place that we're in. And you can't separate the two, and that's why I use it as one word.
Norma, I feel like I'm getting therapy here. I'm already beginning to feel a lot better.
I'm not licensed for that.
No, maybe not, but you've got this calming nature, and you're explaining it in a way that it really is beginning to resonate with me. Now, in addition to time place, you also write in your book that the apocalyptic time place will occur. Do you have any predictions for what that might look like?
Well, I would guess that many of your listeners would have pretty vivid descriptions, which is to say, if you just take a trend line of where it is that we are and you just worsen the conditions of that, it's pretty easy to see how that might occur. And, you know, we have some fixation around things that are happening immediately around us within this country, within the continent, within the islands that I live in. But is this really a worldwide kind of phenomena? And some of it is about the global climate shift and what happens when people and beings are rapidly having to evolve or adapt to an environment that they had an expectation would remain pretty stable from season to season. And so, you know, you have wide-scale droughts, you have people who are agitated in terms of resources, and fighting occurs and conflict breaks out. People migrate in order for a better life. They migrate into places that do not welcome them. And you just have a cascading kind of effect that goes on. We have not yet reached sea level rise, which is, you know, for people of the islands, as I am, right? We have an existential notion of it. But if you live on the continents, in an interesting way, continents are actually being impacted in massive ways by sea level rise, because what has happened is that even though they do not feel it as quickly as the islands, the water tables that are close to the shorelines are being invaded by the saltwater lens underground in the aquifers. And so you have a ways in which the peoples of those places can no longer draw upon.
Norma, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back. We're going to continue our conversation. And listeners, I encourage you to join us. Just call us at 1-800-996-2848. You can speak with Norma Wong. We'll be right back.
As fishing in Alaska becomes more unpredictable, subsistence fishing advocates look for ways to both improve fishery management and ensure access to fish they've maintained for centuries. We'll get a look at threats and opportunities for subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska and elsewhere on the next Native America Calling.
My name is Tammy, and I'm a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians. Smoking gave me heart disease. I used to think of cigarette smoking as something that only affected me. Then at just 44 years old, I had to look into my mom's eyes on the way into emergency heart surgery and tell her, "Mommy, I promise I won't make you bury me." My tip is, think about the people in your life who love you. They go through the pain too, maybe even more than you do.
The people you love are worth quitting for. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Oh boy, Kalehua. Oh boy, Kalehua. Ike Nala. Maka u Kalehua. Ike Kanakala. Liloa ilalo e helea I e ala. Hare ala e ha. Ilalo I. O poe kalehua, o poe kalehua, ki e ki e nala. Maka u kalehua, I ke kanakala. I loa I lalo e helea I e ala, hae ala e ha. I lalo ho I. keo ili ili keo ili ili he ke ke polo no ke ke la opna la ke opna.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. We are hearing from Norma Wong. She is a political strategist and a Zen master. She consults with political leaders and candidates, and she has also worked to find solutions to major problems in Hawaii. She is our native in the spotlight today, and you can join this conversation. All you have to do is call us at 1-800-996-2848. That will connect you with our studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and our producers are standing by waiting for your call. So just call right now, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'd really like to get some calls going, ask Norma Wong questions, or just get some insights as well. She has a wealth of knowledge to share on our show today. And Norma, political strategist, Zen master. I love just the juxtaposition there of those two disciplines that you weave together. What were you first? Were you more involved with political strategizing, or were you a Zen master first? Or how do you just blend those two together so seamlessly to create this profound ideology and methodology that you're able to share with the world?
You know, that certainly was a thing that I may have done at a point in time. I still do strategy, but not necessarily political strategy. That the aspects of governance, the aspects of how to improve the lives of the people that I care about, the community that I care about, that came very young. You know, so I went to my first political convention at the age of 18, you know, the very year I turned 18. And so that was certainly the path that I thought would be necessary in order to create the kind of change that I believed would be possible. That was the first part of my life. But I was very, very fortunate that I met the person who would become my spiritual teacher the very year that I was elected to the State House of Representatives. And I believe that that saved my life, literally, both from a physical standpoint, but also from the perspective of not losing your way in a world where it's really very easy to lose your way, even with the best intentions.
Norma, your first political convention at age 18, what were the issues then when you first got involved with politics? What were the pressing issues, and what did you think that was special or that you were uniquely qualified to address?
Well, you know, I was a young punk, so I'm sure I thought I was special enough to address many things. But, you know, at the age of youth, what you believe that you are best positioned to do is to say that, you know, it's like, well, it's to have that way of knowing that the work is not yet done, right? It's that you could have learned about the history of the people who came before you, and you could have gratitude for that. And you could also have that sense, my life is beginning, and in this beginning part of my life, how may I contribute? And, you know, as a young person, you would believe that there would be so many things that you could contribute. I think the unique aspect of what I thought I had is a lens of observation, right? A lens of questioning the why things were happening, not only the what. And that is something that I still have to today. So I believe actually that that was something that was being developed at that time, but was not just about being young.
Now, you are Native Hawaiian and you are Hakka, which is a nomadic Chinese ethnic group. Were you raised closely in both of these cultures?
I was raised in the mix of the cultures, especially the food ways, and especially in the aspects of kinship that would mean that even if you didn't have close communications with people, that you nonetheless were related and therefore had responsibility for. And then, you know, Hawaii is such a mix. And it's a mix because the peoples of this place have come from many different places, and we live in close quarters because they're islands. And so especially we learned how to be in communication with each other by discerning our behaviors and our ways of doing things, right? And especially eating, by the way. We learned a lot about people by what it is that they love and how to make that food for them.
Tell me more. Tell me more. The eating part and the food. What do you look for with regard to how people eat?
Well, you know, I am not a food historian, but I believe, or at least I was told the story, that Hawaii was one of the first places where the notion of fusion food came into being. You know, the fusion of different foods from different places and to place them harmoniously on one dish is different than just taking the foods of different peoples and mixing it together. How do you put it harmoniously into one meal in which it feels like it makes sense being together, and that you can tell where different elements have come from culturally, but that together it makes something that is new and vibrant and thriving and not extractive and not a way in which you're disrespecting the culture of another people's. And I think that nuance understanding is what we get.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I understand. And when you describe Hawaii as being one of the first places where fusion food started, it reminds me, like I shared with you before the show, I've been to Hawaii a couple of times, once as a very young child, and then a few years ago as an adult. And it's amazing how much Hawaii has changed during that time frame. And I imagine for you, having lived there your whole life and having been involved in politics, you've seen those changes firsthand. And how has that influenced you politically and spiritually as well?
Well, you know, it's the changes that have occurred here have been about the rapid growth. And it's been much more about the growth of outside influence than it has been about the growth of resident population. And so we have the problems of our success, right? That if we do not interrupt, and we do not interrupt that notion of that it is that success means that continuous growth is necessary, then we will become as in any other place that will effectively have interrupted our special way of being. And, you know, there's that tension, that underlying tension that you could feel, that during the pandemic, to me, it was extraordinarily important moment for us. Because during the pandemic, when we went from, literally over 80% hotel occupancy to, you know, under 40% occupancy in 2 weeks, when unemployment went from under 2% to double digits within 6 weeks, when that happened, that it was this extraordinary aspect of way in which people needed to be in relationship to each other, and that we understood we have a memory of how to be in that communal care. And to me, it was extraordinary. Yes, there was deprivation, and yes, there was suffering, and yes, all of those kinds of things. But really, it's like we began to remember something about ourselves that's going to serve us well.
Norma, let's talk about some of the specific projects you've worked on. There was a mapping that you worked on in response to major events in Hawaii. Those include the Red Hill crisis in 2021, and that was a situation where fuel leaked into the freshwater aquifer in Oahu, and you were also involved in the aftermath of the 2023 Lahaina wildfires. Tell me more about your role there and how you're involved with the decision-making process, because these were huge, huge issues that, you know, garnered attention all over the world.
You know, these certainly are. And I would say that my talking about it is probably the most public aspect of it, which is to say that my role these days is not as being a public figure in these things, but by helping to advise people and to help them see various strategies that might be possible. And I do that not as a direct political operative or as an elected official or any of those kinds of things, you know, more as an advisor, more as someone who would be in conversation with you, more as someone who would say, for example, with respect to Red Hill, right? With Red Hill, the notion of the aquifer being threatened in a way that we do not yet know what the fullness of that will be, and that we shouldn't wait for that contamination to occur many generations from now, but that it is our responsibility to vigorously do the work, both scientifically as well as research, as well as resourcing, as well as monitoring, as well as asking the hard questions in a plan that we would do in relationship to each other, so that hundreds of years from now, we would not be in a place of wondering why it is that the water is poisoned. And so to have that future notion of our responsibility and then to take the actions now, today, that's my role.
You mentioned the hard questions. What are those hard questions, and how do you answer or ask hard questions? Because I deal with that every day here on the show with interviews and with topics. The hard questions, right? But sometimes that's easier said than done. What's your approach, Norma?
My approach is to ask them with curiosity, and then to not require the people who I am asking to be the only people who are required to provide the response. You know, which is to say that there's this way in which if we are to be more than activists, if we're to stand in governance, that we have to take responsibility for creating the answers and not only requiring the answers to come from other people. And it, you know, to understand that our worldview as indigenous peoples, as island peoples, as peoples who are not as colonized as other people might be, that part of what we could offer in this moment is a perspective about not only how things are going wrong, but how things can be righted again.
State legislator in Hawaii, tell us about that journey and what led you on that aspect of your career, because I find that's also a really fascinating aspect of what you've accomplished.
Well, let's see. You know, I lived at that time in a small place on the windward side of Oahu. It's called Waimanalo. And I lived in the farm lots. And Waimanalo is made up of a large Native Hawaiian population. And it is both homestead land and farmland. And there are people who live in a beautiful place in which we have much to give and we have much that we needed. And at the time, I actually worked on the staff of a state senator who happened to be part Hawaiian, Native Hawaiian and Chinese. His name was T.C. Yim. And Senator Yim, and this was back, in the late 70s, T.C. Yim had a view about Hawaii needing to become energy self-sufficient. And that was thought to be a totally radical view at that moment. He would have been certainly an outlier. Now that is run of the course, but he was certainly an outlier at that moment. And he was holding up the approval of one of the directors of one of the state of Hawaii departments because he didn't believe that that department was doing enough in this particular area. And he didn't have the votes. And so the Senate president said to him, T.C., you don't have the votes, but you have a righteous cause. And even though we won't be able to vote this way, I'm going to give you the full moment of time on the Senate floor so that you can enter into the record why it's important for Hawaii to be thinking in this direction. And as a senator was doing that, and I was watching in the galley, the representative from my district was watching also, and he was laughing. And I couldn't take it. I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand the notion of someone taking someone else's dignity away, but also on his lack of foresight. It's like whether you have the votes or not, the lack of foresight.
I'm just sitting here, I'm picturing you sitting there in that galley, in that experience, and hearing that person laugh, and really, really powerful the way you describe it, Norma. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We'll continue our conversation, and we've got a couple of callers on the line as well. So listeners, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Trickster Cultural Center, an authentic first voice of Native American veterans and cultural arts, will host the 2025 Summer Youth Powwow to foster community relations, youth literacy, cultural exchange, and provide local community resources. Trickster Cultural Center's Summer Youth Powwow is open to the public at no charge and takes place May 31st in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at tricksterculturalcenter.org/summer-youth-powwow-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, it's important to act fast and start hands-only CPR. Call for emergency medical help and an AED. Push hard and fast in the center of the chest, giving 100 to 120 compressions per minute until help arrives. Learn more from the American Heart Association about the life-saving skill of CPR at heart.org/nation. The American Heart Association supports this show.
Support by the American Indian College Fund. The American Indian College Fund provides millions of dollars of scholarships to thousands of Native students every year. Tribal citizens of every age and experience are eligible. The deadline for applications is May 31st, and you can find everything you need to apply at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org, or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Education is the answer. Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
We're glad you're able to join us today on Native America Calling. We're talking with Norma Wong, a Native Hawaiian writer who has advice for navigating tumultuous times. You can join this conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. And our first caller is on the line right now in Florida, listening to the show online. This is Judith LeBlanc. Hello, Judith. I'm so glad you called in. It's good to talk with you again.
Good to talk with you.
Well, tell us more. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Norma. It's even better to talk with Norma Wong.
Yeah, it sure is. Tell me more about your relationship with Norma.
Well, Native Organizers Alliance has had the blessing of working with Norma for several years now, exploring, looking at practice-based evidence of how an indigenous framework can be a guide to today's political issues, to our organizing and building community, and in fact, strengthen our traditional cultures and create new ones that our descendants will be thinking long and hard about. So I have a question, actually, for Norma. She and I have been to a number of rodeos together. I am the elder in this couple. Sometimes people call us Thelma and Louise as we're cruising in this, on this timeline. You know, our timeline, Indigenous framework, starts with the beginning of time and it continues until the end of time. And we have very strong Indigenous belief systems in every corner of the globe, not just here in Indian country or in Hawaii. But our peoples have strong belief systems that are very much grounded in being aware of all things and the interrelationship of all things and the impact of things in motion far beyond what we can see and hear in the moment. So, Norma, how are you?
Oh, Judith, I am well, although I would say I will be better when we can actually be in the same place together. So I am missing your presence, and I'm particularly missing the ways in which we might be able to imagine together about the future.
Well, you don't have to wait too much longer because we're bringing a full team of Native Organizers Alliance staff and partners from a number of different reservations to be with you in April in New Mexico. So the wait is not too much longer. Mm.
Thelma and Louise will reunite soon. Judith, Norma's book, When No Thing Works, what was the biggest takeaway you got from that read?
There's something that Norma has said, which is reflected in almost every chapter, which is set in the past, which is we don't get things done to check things off of the list. We do things in the present in order to keep moving forward, to prepare for the next steps on this timeline of life that goes on before us and will continue on until the end of time. And in a time like this, that to-do list is pretty darn long. And the scary thing is that some of the to-dos are blank and we're waiting for them to come crashing down on our head. So it would be easy to just breathlessly move forward, do this, do that, stay busy, but not be strategic. But one of the things in the book that actually raised a question for me is, how do we in this life, given all that's gone on before and all that will go on in the future, how would you describe the difference between hope and optimism?
Hope and optimism. Judah, thank you for calling in. Thank you so much. And Norma, how do we describe the difference between what is hope and what is optimism?
You know, I don't have a I don't have a rosy lens, right, in which I see the world. I see it pretty objectively. Objectively means also I don't see it with like a judgment about things. Because I don't see something with a judgment, then I can say that what is occurring, even if it may be horrific in its outcome, is about a trend line going in a particular direction. And in that trend line, it means that it is well beyond the particular actors at this moment who are doing these bad things. It's well beyond that. And so we have a lot of work to do. For me, the hope is in our ability to be able to hold many truths and then to keep moving forward on whatever it is we're doing, and to do it with such determination that it doesn't matter whether I personally win or lose, or whether I personally succeed or fail. It's really on whether or not, as a generation of people, we're able to move the ball forward, right? To move the ball forward. I don't have optimism about things or pessimism, but I do have deep hope.
All right. Yeah. I like that, Norma. And definitely I can relate to just moving. Let's just keep going forward. Just keep moving. Keep making things. Keep maintaining that momentum. That's what I really like about this message. Let's go back to the phones. This is Jen listening online also in East Texas. Hi, Jen. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Sean. As a Cherokee member of the American Indian culture, we're having some experiences now that are very bottom-like. But I am so grateful for Ms. Wong being here today and all she's done in her community. And I've kept up with those activities as they've happened. I have not known of her, but I feel like she has a lot that she can offer to people from her experience in all of that work, as well as her experience as she was hoping to be helpful in the legislative branches and so forth. But can Ms. Wong possibly offer us some advice as a strategist? How can we, as non-Native and Native American communities, make a change in this persevere as we have been experiencing the present time of things that are happening? And my concern is, as she just said, where it's leading. So can you offer us some hope as how to stay together as a activist, somebody who's participating actively as she has, and not just sitting and being hopeful in ways, but we can also express to other people how to feel hopeful and yet be actively doing something. And thank you so much for your answer.
All right. Thank you, Jen.
Aloha, Jen. Please call me Norma. Yeah, the part of when we are facing this moment, it seems simple, but I believe very strongly that as systems and institutions and even governments collapse, that it's really important for people not to act as individuals, but to act in kinship with each other and to do everything that you can to both grow and cultivate and strengthen community, and to not be as narrow as we may have been in the past about how we define community. Not to require people to have the same identity as you, but to look for like-hearted and below the heart, right? That part of you that is the gut of that knows whether a human is a good human or not. To be in relationship and then to very practically cultivate the ways and the means by which a community must do things for each other. It's going to come down to very practical, basic things. Can we feed each other? Can we shelter each other? Can we care for each other's needs? Can we be in relationship with them? At this moment, part of the ways in which collapse occurs is that collapse, people who are either intentionally or unintentionally participating in this collapse as a strategy, that their hope is that there will be despair. And their hope is that there will be suffering. And their hope is that people will not find their own means of thriving. So, when children can speak our language, that's thriving. When people can have enough to eat and the kind of food that they need to eat, that's thriving. When we are in relationship to each other and we have to manage our own affairs, because those affairs cannot be taken care of by other people, but then we have maybe a little more excess capacity beyond our group and we can help other groups. That's the building blocks of governance. And I believe that actually, the thing that we tend to say, oh, we just do that just because, government or some other organization isn't providing for us. The mutual care part. We should not downplay that. That's actually the building blocks of the governance that we need to have, and also the governance that we know that we can do if we're in kinship with each other. And also, it's every day. Don't go without creating something that is beautiful that you can share with someone else. Sometimes that other person may be you. So every day, do something small that can contribute to another person's life.
Okay. All right. Norma, that's a good message. And you also talk about acting in kinship. And we have another caller on the line who knows a lot about acting in kinship. He listens to our show every day. He lives in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. He listens on Keeley Radio, and his name is Chanupa. Hello, big brother. You are on the air.
Wopila. Wopila, Sean, and this, to the sister. You know, when I was in Hawaii, that's how I pronounce it, okay? I remember Mihilani is a grandma. She's on the island, okay? And one thing she taught me was that always use this term to our people. And they say, they tell your people from, in our understanding, is Lakota, we choye kile nahakti onkiutapi. See? So, to the grandma right there that's talking, wopila tanki ichiche, and all your understanding that you're giving to our elders, wopila from the Pine Ridge Indian Ree, like we say, ampetu wanji, wolakota kile nahakti oyate onkupi. See? We're going to do it from our ancestors' point of view, and thank you, Sean, and for the grandma for doing her word.
Thank you, Chanupa, for joining the conversation. Norma, we've got about another minute before we have to wrap up. Feel free to respond to Chanupa.
Ah, Wopala Chanupa. Now, that many peoples of many languages, that if we understand that the ways of modernity have separated us artificially, and that now is the time where our wisdom needs to come from under the ground. We have put our seeds under the ground too long, and now if they are unable to meet the sky, the water, the sun, right, that perhaps it may be too long. And so we need this moment. Right? This is the moment when our wisdom must grow.
Norma, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining the show, and just best of luck in all of your projects. And again, just thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today.
Mahalo, mahalo nui, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. Norma Wong, our guest on Native America Calling today. Please join us again tomorrow. We'll get updates on subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska and elsewhere. Until then, I'm Sean Spruce. Enjoy your day.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com. Support by AARP. If someone asks you to buy gift cards to pay off debt, it's a scam. Imposters will claim your Social Security number's at risk, or your utility company will stop service due to late payments, or you won the lottery and only need to pay some upfront costs. They'll say the fastest way is to buy gift cards and share the numbers on the back. Anyone who tells you to pay a debt with a gift card is a scammer. More information on gift card scams at aarp.org/giftcards.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Honey, come and go with me back to the West Indies. Baby, can't you see I'm losing my pep and my energy? What I need is my
gin and coconut water. Gin and coconut water.
The jelly, the
gin and coconut water. I cannot get in America.
What is the tonic, man?
Gin and coconut water.
Yes, it is a bill of the
gin and coconut water.
The jelly, the
gin and coconut water. I cannot get in America.
at the medical center, what you think? The doctors told me I'll have to drink. They said, take this advice from me, Houdini, and go back to the West Indies. What you need is your gin and coconut.